Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. Today we're talking about something that, by its nature, stirs no extreme emotions, and therefore, I think is often overlooked. Although, I would say it's one of the most important concepts to integrate into your life. Would you agree?
I don't know.
Okay.
We'll see by the end of the episode.
Let's talk about it, because what we're talking about now is the opposite of extremes. It's right down the middle. It's the reason why the bell curve exists. We're talking about moderation.
I'm Zach Schaefer.
I'm David Ponder. You want to start over?
No, I think that's great.
Okay.
Let's just moderate this, man.
All right, let's do it.
Well, I mean, I think you kind of hit on the definition already by saying avoiding excess and extremes. Moderation tends to be that, right? I mean, unless you have a different one you want to throw out.
I mean, if you read the definition that you get online, it's basically that exact thing, the avoidance of excess or extremes, especially in one's behavior or political opinions, they say. Well, I don't know why they would try to put
category. That's dumb. Yeah. I mean, it could be anything.
Yeah, I agree. So, no, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, when I was thinking through this topic, my thoughts have definitely evolved on this over time, and I'm not sure where I've ended up right now, so we'll see. Maybe this podcast will bring some clarity to me as we talk about it, but I'm looking at my PI profile, my behavioral profile, which measures me on four different internal motivators: patience, dominance, extroversion, and formality. I'm about as wide of a spread as you can get. That is an extreme excess spread for what drives me and then the associated behaviors with each of those drives. So by my literal genetic hardwired makeup, I am not a moderate person. Science is showing, I'm looking at it, is telling me I'm not moderate. I have to like actively go against who I am hardwired to be in order to try to be moderate. Now, not that that's bad.
Do you think, though, that like when you put your traits together, they might moderate each other?
No, they amplify each other. My high need for dominance coupled with my extremely low need for patience is a recipe for success in a capitalistic society and disaster in most personal relationships.
And yet you're pretty darn successful in personal relationships.
Yeah, but is success, should you moderate success? Because when you're too successful, all kinds of other things get fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, I would say yeah. We could try to think of things where, I mean, the only things I can think of where moderation doesn't apply are ideals and like ephemeral things. Like
I on the ideals, I also disagree there.
Well, I mean, like love.
Gotcha. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Gotcha.
You can't, in my opinion, you can't give too much love or stuff
fair
like
enough.
That. But
I'll agree with that. Yeah.
Things where moderation doesn't apply are few and far between. Just about everything, if you ask me.
Most of people, I think, when they're contemplating moderation, immediately go to issues tied to consumption. Drinking,
right.
Food,
right.
Over-exercise, you need to moderate things. And I think, you know, there's clearly a lot of truth in that as somebody who doesn't drink anymore. But I think you should apply it not just to consumption, but to production.
I agree.
Too much. And there's story after story of people who work themselves into the hospital or the grave because they didn't moderate their need to fulfill that internal drive of being a producer, being an achiever, being successful, and it's negative on their health.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the psychology of what you're talking about, I mean, it's like anything. When we talked about our happiness episode, we talked about how there's something within us that wants progress and wants productivity. It's like an innate character of the human condition. And it basically said, you know, there's something, even if you're just, if you're building a fence and you woke up and that fence was 10 feet long, and when you went to bed, the fence was 15 feet long, you feel good about that. Like, it helps you sleep. There's something good about that. But I agree with you, like, if you're trying to build 12 fences at the same time and manage three teams that are fence builders, all of a sudden, you go to bed and you're, even if your fences are all, you know, 15 feet long, you're trying to think of, there's a problem that arose with team three and the other fence is, it's looking a little leany. And then you, next thing you know, you can't sleep, right?
Capitalism is the opposite of moderation. Capitalism is take everything to excess, is stretch it all as much as possible to increase your capital. I mean, a synonym for it could just be more. Accumulate.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I was listening to a billionaire talk and try and be like, oh, I'm the smartest person ever because I'm a billionaire. And he was saying, yeah, people keep asking me how much, you know, why do I keep doing this? And he's like, and I'll tell you the answer. He's like, they say, when's enough enough? He's like, more. Like, it's always, that's enough. What? How much is enough? More. I'm just like, okay.
Well, that summarizes capitalism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to me, the very notion of where we're at with that economic system should show you that there's a big need for moderation in many things, behaviors, consumption, production. So my thinking used to be this. Whenever I'd think about moderation, I'd jokingly say, the only thing I take in moderation is moderation. And there was truth to that, but it also got me in a lot of trouble, personally. And so I have tried to be more moderate. Well, let me ask you this. How is moderation and patience related?
I mean, in the same way that everything else is related, you, even if you have a natural tendency to have a low amount of patience, learning to stretch yourself into a more moderate stance is going to be beneficial.
But my point is, they're closely correlated, those two things. People can be, who are more patient, my guess would, I would assume they could be probably more naturally moderate in their behaviors, at least.
I'm not so sure, man.
Well, I think so.
I think people who have extreme patience would be called lazy.
I didn't say extreme patience.
Yeah.
You said more patience than me.
Well, I'm just saying, anything can be taken to either side of the spectrum. I don't think you could say people who are more patient are more moderate. Well, no, you can get too far on the patient side, and no, they're not moderate.
But if the starting point is where I'm at on the continuum of patience,
well,
which is extremely
well,
low,
then
and that's the point I'm making.
Then it'll be a little bit more moderate than you.
There you go.
Sure, sure. I think it's interesting how we learn about moderation as kids through experience, right? This is a lesson that I think everyone learns fairly young, and it's a fairly ubiquitous one. And yet, oftentimes, and still, you know, I'm approaching 40, and I still find times where I don't know why, but I failed to extrapolate that lesson into all the areas of my life. So, like, a kid will think that if something is good, then they can't have too much of it, just because they've never had that experience. Be it playing, and then they wear themselves out, or being out in the sun too long, you know, swimming and being out in the sun too long, or eating too much ice cream, right? Like, as a child, you don't have the concept of too much of a good thing. Like, you just know that you're getting an emotional boost from the experience you're having, and so why would you ever stop? But there's like this, and I was reading an article in Psychology Today as we were preparing for the episode. It talks about an inverted U. I mentioned the bell curve because I thought about that. And it's like those experiences are like that. They're like an upside down U where, like, you achieve peak emotional benefit, or you achieve peak enjoyment at a certain point. And then once you get over that, you know, too much of anything becomes a bad thing.
Yeah, I like what you're saying there. Except the fact, and maybe I'm not even in disagreement with you, but our society celebrates nothing but excess and extreme. So my point to that would be, then nobody fucking learned those lessons as kids, at least in the United States, because all we go tanning, go tan more, go tan twice a day, get tan two times, work out three times a day. Everything, any TV show, which you can argue is a celebration of things that we think are good and we should try to mimic, is not moderation.
Well, we're yes, but I would say that that's, we can talk about different things that we talk about and we quote unquote value on the show, ideals that we value, that our modern day society in the United States is, does not integrate well. I mean, that's,
yeah, this is one.
This is definitely one of them, and I'll agree with you. And I've got points to talk about.
Well, let me ask you
different
this.
Areas where
good.
Where we don't value that.
You went out to the ball game last night. Average Joe goes out to the ball game, and that's, if they're not going to seven ball games a week, that's good. That's moderate. They're going to enjoy the experience. But then what often happens, again, not you, but many people, not all, but many, they'll go get just absolutely hammered at the ball game.
Yeah, that's one of the things I
So where's the
about.
Moderation there? They're moderate in the fact that they're going out, not every night, but to enjoy that experience. But then maybe something that they use to enhance the enjoyment of the game through typically alcohol there, and no judgment. You know, I was that guy drinking 25 free cups of booze while I was there. They can't moderate that, a lot of people, and you see it.
Well, and I think that there's, when you say it's moderate, I think there's forced moderation through resource constraint.
Yes, that's one of my points I want to talk about later.
And so they can't go to the ball game every time. You know what I mean? And then you see people who have instant success, or they come through a windfall of money. And what do? They go to the extreme with everything. Instant excess in all areas of their life. And then it's why, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I think you see so many people who hit the lottery broke and depressed, and
or professional athletes who come from meager backgrounds.
So maybe that's an interesting thought that we could explore a little bit more, which is like, we in the areas of our life. So food is a big problem in America, in the United States, because it's so abundant. Like, there is no forced moderation for the most part for you know, 90-95% of the U.S. population. And you can see it in statistics, health. My God, just
obesity.
Go. Yeah, just walking around the ballgame last night.
It's easy. All you got to do is look at a country's poor people. Ours tend to be overweight.
Yeah.
That's the easiest indicator that food's pretty abundant.
Yeah, so food's definitely abundant. So it's almost like when you relieve the resource constraint, and it's all, you know, we talk about evolutionary psychology on just about every one of these, about, well, why do humans act that way? And the theories always go back to, well, because we were hunter-gatherers, right? And we didn't have unlimited food. And so whenever we got that food, we had a survival mechanism to eat as much of it as we could, to pack on as much fat and get as many calories in that moment as we could, so that we could survive the drought or the times when we didn't find food or were unsuccessful at hunting. And that makes sense. And then you take a situation like today where it's like, okay, well, now we farm food and we have factory-produced food systems, and we have an abundance of food. We throw more food away than probably any country has ever done. And what are the consequences of that? Well, people don't know how to self-moderate when you relieve the resource constraints. And I think that's probably true in, it's just abundantly clear when we talk about food. So, like, if you go Google moderation, it's like, well, food, exercise, alcohol, like, clear, these are clear places where you can just see very, you know, even though the negative effects happen over time, right? Like, kids can eat too much and generally be okay, even though we do have a childhood obesity epidemic. You'll see the effects of them fairly quickly. You know what I mean? Like, if I were suddenly to go and start binging on stuff, you would see the effects in, I don't know, a year at most, right? Where I think there are a lot of things in our life that are not tied to the way we look, but they're tied to the way we feel. And all of a sudden, we start feeling bad, and we don't know why.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't ever, like,
tie it to consumption.
Yeah,
or,
we don't ever
moderation.
Like stop and look.
Because
and
it's
go,
behavioral, and that's habit changing. Everything ties to choice. You said something earlier about forced moderation. So one thing, one of my notes was it's middle class. Moderation is a problem of the middle class plus. If you're poor and you don't have money, moderation isn't, that's not a problem for you. Why? Because you can't take things to the excess or extreme, you know, you have no money to do so. So for me, moderation becomes the types that we're talking about anyway, a problem of people who have a little bit of a disposable income and disposable time.
Yeah, I think it's easy.
It's a choice.
Yes, with a caveat, and I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not pushing back against you. What I'm saying is, it's easy to talk about moderation when resource constraints are removed. On the other hand, it also isn't moderate when you have no resources. Like, you end up on the extreme of the other side. In those instances, obviously, you can't go to the extremes and the excesses of drinking too much alcohol all the time or whatever because you don't have the resources to do so. On the flip side, you can do too much of some things if the resources, if those things are available, you know, like, I don't know. You could see homeless people in this country like turn into alcoholics because of the fact I think that they're trying to self-medicate or
yeah,
who knows.
In a different reality. How many funerals have you been to where all the stories were just about how moderate of a person we don't fucking care about this value
right.
in the United States.
Right.
It is absolute. The only time you hear about this trait in a story is when it's a satirical story played by Steve Carell or some actor like that. And they're like making fun of the whole person's life of how moderate they were and they didn't do anything.
All we do
is tell stories about the excesses, the extremes. Oh, that sucks now, but it'll give us a good story later. We don't care about this value in the United States.
It's interesting how that's almost ubiquitous. Like, we created a book of world records to track extremes. Like, and we try to, how many more extremes can we get? If you think about athletes, no one ever cares about the most well-rounded athlete. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They talk about this guy in the NFL can run the fastest. He's the fastest in
the
NFL.
He can throw it 100 yards. He's never done it in a touchdown, but he can throw it that far.
He can throw it the farthest in the NFL. You know what I mean? And nobody's like, well, this guy is he's like middle of the pack when it comes to speed. But man, like when you put all his attributes together, he's really well-rounded. Like,
and that's psychology. We're attracted to the star and that
outlier.
The bright shining shit instead of even if the person's just logging in wins but they're not sexy doing it, people are not generally attracted to that.
You're right.
Outside of the owners of the teams.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
Well, it's not about being right.
No,
it's just an observation.
Well, no, that's in every area of life though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not just like we're using sports as the analogy we're talking about, but we always look to outliers. Someone who's extremely tall.
Let's go back to childhood. You're talking about childhood. What are things that occur instantly from kindergarten on that start teaching us to not be moderate? Talent shows.
Talent shows.
Instantly.
I mean,
talent. Show your excess. Show your extreme.
Standardized testing, you know. You're better than average. All this stuff, yeah.
Yep. Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, badges. Do you want to collect one or two and be No, you want a million. You want
to
be covered in that shit. Show your flair.
You have to have the most.
Absolutely. What else? Just and then in how we tell stories. Read the stories that kids. When you're reading kids' stories, pay attention to the characteristics in those stories. They're often of extreme. Yeah. So I mean, to me, it's we put that on kids early on, and I'm guilty of that myself, because we know what's remembered, celebrated, rewarded in human culture, and it ain't moderation. But what you said is really powerful, that when you moderate, you probably feel better internally.
Well,
that internal motivation is externally, society's all about extreme and excess. But if you only turn to external motivation for yourself, you end up like Anthony Bourdain or somebody who's got a great job and clearly, internally, they're wrecked.
I was going to bring that up. And so for folks who don't know, Anthony Bourdain committed suicide this year.
Mm-hmm.
It was this year. And from all of our societal measures, I keep hearing people say, well, he had the best job ever. he just got to hang around cool people and travel and eat food. And it's like, well, that's true. From an external perspective, the things that we value, it was the highest. But I love what you just said, which is, what about your internal drives? What about, and it seems to be that there's some wisdom in knowing that the universe is the one who rewards moderation.
Right. Life.
Our society awards
extremes. Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. So our society rewards extremes. And so we seem to be like, oh, well, I want to achieve recognition through, you know, whatever groups or people or, you know, our society. And then I need to chase extremes in order to achieve that recognition. And then we end up unhappy. And then we're like, well, why the hell am I so unhappy?
What about something like alcohol, though? That plays an interesting role in our existence as humans. It allows us to get such an enhanced state and experience life in a, just a totally different manner when used well, and how it kind of it should be, if you will. The function is to enhance joy in the moment, let loose a little on your inhibitions, you know, just have that fun and that energy, almost like a kid. But then lots of people, you know, go beyond it. And then at the extreme is you have alcoholics, of which I am. I can't use that. I'm done. I burnt my ticket on using that thing in moderation. I have to do total abstinence from it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And
that's
you can't relate to that at all.
I can't.
0%.
I can relate to it in single instances. So I was going to bring that up, right? So like we learn real quick the first few times that we drink that if you drink too much in one sitting, what happens? Your world is going to come crashing down. You're going to be poisoned. Literally poisoned. Your body is going to try to get that stuff out in any way possible, and you will end up vomiting, and you will end up in bed, and
right.
Headaches, and sweating, and just, it feels like you're going to die because your body just got poisoned. Right. And yet,
I went, and that's exactly what happened to me, and it didn't matter, because that upper part was so great. I just said, I'll put up with that other end of the spectrum for 20 years.
Hey, I got to get to that top of the U.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing about alcohol is it removes your judgment. So when you're at the top of the U,
you don't know you're there.
You're like, oh, I need one more to get even higher on the top
and
of the U.
And for the alcoholic, it's just completely different. You just, you're always trying to get back to that. Whatever it is, fake reality of when things were great when you were drinking in your head, or even crack addicts, whatever, just any kind of addict, and it's just gone. You can't ever get back to it. You're on a cliff that's just constantly eroding, and it's just quicker and quicker.
It
destroys moderation for a true alcoholic. Or a true addict. There is no moderation for you with whatever that thing is. It's just, if you want to have moderation in other aspects of your life, you have to be abstinent, or at least for me, abstinent in that one thing.
Well, it's because once you start to climb up the U, you know you can't stop until you come crashing down the other side.
Yeah.
You've learned that about yourself.
And so when I said my thoughts have evolved on this, I hadn't thought about this. Wow, it's evolved because I've removed alcohol.
Yeah.
And I'm able to be much better. I can be more moderate more easily in other aspects of my life when I'm not constantly feeling guilty internally, emotionally, spiritually, physically wrecked from drinking. Who did I hurt? Who did I upset? What did I do? You told me once, you take one step forward and three steps back. Well, I don't have to take those three steps back. I can take them back for other things in my life, but not that. And so I think that's allowed me to maybe be more moderate. I'm not having to deal with those because looking at my thing, I'm so damn extreme. Well, then you threw booze on top of that. I was a hoot to be around, or I could just be an absolute monster.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I experienced it, and I believe everything you say there is true. I would extrapolate it and say that's your experience with alcohol, and alcohol is one of those things. And I would also go to say it's interesting because alcohol can be a positive in moderation.
A great thing.
Yeah.
If I could moderate it, sure I'd do it. I just know I can't.
It's a social lubricant. Yeah. You know, it can bring out a little bit of looser personality, make some connections.
Have been created because of the wonderful use of alcohol.
Exactly.
Billions of people.
Exactly. It lowers inhibitions and gets rid of fears. And we all agree, like, inhibitions and fears can be negatives in themselves. On the flip side, it's got to be in moderation. And it's one of those things that some of us, just can't do in moderation. And you know what I'll say? I'll say, like, so obviously there are people then who have things that tend to eschew moderation, like alcohol. people tend to demonize because they don't understand that. They don't understand that it's maybe it's not the thing itself. Maybe it's the extreme use of it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not an alcohol basher. I think people should use
it. Well, I'm going to extrapolate
for those of us that can't.
Well, I'll say some controversial things, right? Like heroin, it has like some good uses. They gave morphine and I believe straight heroin to people in the battlefield who had been injured, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what did it do? It made them feel good, you know? Like, it was useful. There is an actual benefit to it when used purposefully and in moderation.
Right.
On the other hand, that is one that somehow hooks itself into our brain, and we cannot stop from going on the other side of that U, and then you see the negatives of extremes, right? So that's that. And then, obviously, you can get in arguments, but I'd say, like, all drugs that have, like, a psychoactive effect.
Yeah, change the way you think and feel.
Change the way you think, change the way you feel. They tend to be demonized because their negative impacts used in
most
extremes.
People can't moderate
and most
it.
People do use them to extreme, yeah.
For me, what moderation, if you can't moderate things in your life, what occurs is the things that bring you the greatest joy, you're unable to experience that joy over time if you can't moderate things, right? The greatest pleasures cease to please. So if you're a billionaire, or you just have, for whatever, the resources to constantly be going on extravagant vacations, those become less meaningful. That just becomes normal and mundane, and that's not good.
Yes.
That's one. Talk about moderation. Let's talk about it in terms of geography. We live in one of the most moderate fucking spots in the United States.
Right in the middle.
The old Midwest.
Yep.
What are our values? People can't, like, humility, generosity, being nice to each, like, and those are great things, but they're not celebrated.
Oh,
everything's the
not.
Extremes, Texas, California, the East Coast.
We're flyover
beaches.
Country.
We're flyover. But why I love St. Louis and I love the Midwest for all those reasons I just kind of sarcastically mentioned, I value those. When I go on vacation, it's awesome every time because I appreciate it, because I don't have those climates, those temperaments, the mountains, the beaches here. If I lived there, I just wouldn't take it. I wouldn't feel about it the same way I do since I'm here.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. It seems to fade into the background. You know what I mean? So if something is ever present in your life, its effect and its impact lessens.
Yeah.
And so I agree with you, and I loved what you said about how overuse, like, wears it out. It's like when you listen to a song. A song gives you, like, all this emotion,
all
right?
Song is emotional flow, man.
My God, you listen to a good song for the first, the real, real good songs, the first time you hear them, they hook you in. And then you get this high from just hearing that song. And then you're like, oh my gosh, I have to hear it again. And then now we've got electronic. I remember when we were kids and Under the Bridge was popular, right? And you either had to go to the store and buy the CD to be able to hear a song over and over again, or you had to hear it on the radio, right? Or you could do what I remember doing as a kid, which was I taped it. You put a cassette tape in, you wait for the radio to play the song, you record it. So I had a radio, and then I could play it as many times as I wanted. And I loved that song so much, and I couldn't get enough of it for weeks because I had to wait for the radio to play it. So it was forced moderation, right? Resource constraint.
Yeah, but listen.
But then I wore it out instantly.
Well, you wore it out, but think of I think you got that enhanced joy, not necessarily from the song. Of course, that's part of it. But from the ritual and the work and the effort you had to put in to get prepared to even capture the song. It's like, you make your lunch for yourself all the time, and I take note of that. Even if it's just making a sandwich or doing one of your little healthy microwave meals, like, you take your time a little bit, and you have some ritual there. I always notice this. You've done it since we were a kid. Fuck that. I'll go somewhere and just make my food and take my plate away. And I know the difference. Like you put in that effort. That meal is more sumptuous for you because you took the 5 or 10 minutes to get it ready, get it organized, and eat it. Whereas I'll go eat at the Post, and it's just like, okay, great, another meal, in and out.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, so to me, with the the excess use and playing of the song, I think what also brought some energy was the fact that you had to be a producer. You had to put in some thought and strategy and work in order to capture it and get it done.
There's somewhat... So that goes back to what we were talking about, hunter-gatherer, right?
Yeah, you...
We just had the food.
Hunted and gathered the song.
Yeah, well, exactly. And so there's something about like delayed gratitude and achievement that mm-hmm. makes those things better. And maybe that's part of excess, right? Like all of a sudden, if you just have a steady stream of whatever you want.
I'm so spoiled here, man. Oh, Kizzy does everything for me food-wise. Yeah. Like outside of grilling, I do all the grilling. But I really think that I might starve to death in the United States if Kizzy ever divorced me. Because she's enabled me to just be, I don't know.
Well, you know what? This is a perfect thing to talk about excess, right? And how we have it in the United States. Look at what we have within a five-mile radius of our home. We have restaurants and meals that are... as good, I don't care. Like, food only gets so good.
Right.
You know, you talk to chefs and they'll argue with you and whatever, the foodies, because they want, you know, the...
Well, they're selling.
There might be a tenth of a percentage of a difference in whatever, and this ingredient is so rare. But we're talking about extremes here again.
It's stories.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Let's be honest. You can go to, you know, good restaurants in just about any city of the U.S. and have meals that are unbelievably good. Unbelievably good, right? And I can remember, we did, you know, I'm not going to be one of these people who's like, oh, we didn't eat out when I was a kid. We did. We ate out, you know, but it would be Ryan's Steakhouse a lot.
Red Lobster.
Oh, Red Lobster.
We
my
just
God.
Did that well, this that past
was,
weekend.
That was awesome, right? But didn't do it enough that it was to the point where it like, I never got quote unquote wore out.
Burnt out. Yeah.
And as I got older and, you know, started working for corporations and traveling and eating on the corporate dime, now all of a sudden it's like every meal is out. You really don't have a choice. Like you're not going to be cooking food or anything, so you get no home cooked food. You get all restaurant prepared food, which is all extreme flavor, which is why the nutrition facts are probably so poor on it, right? It's got a lot of salt, a lot of sugar, a lot of
butter,
fat, you know, and it's delicious, but God, eat that for a few weeks in a row exclusively. And then all of a sudden, like you said, the joy gets sucked out, right? Then you sit down at a 4-star restaurant and they're bringing out like the best foods and you're just like, yeah. Looks all right.
But again, to me, that's the United States, right? So you got to travel. There's communities in the United States that you can go check out. They tend to be a little more dangerous, but you can travel throughout the rest of the world where people are more resource deprived to really try to get some perspective on how good we've got it with our lack of moderation and the amount of excess and the options. It's choices.
I love what you're saying. So I wanted to integrate the idea of, and this isn't typically used as, I don't think it's typically used. I don't know. I'm not going to claim that I know a lot about this. I don't think it's typically used to talk about moderation, but I'm talking about the yin and the yang, right?
It was perfect. So I had a tie into this. Great.
And it's basically like the symbol that without the dark, there is no light,
mm-hmm.
right? So the opposite is what makes, opposite extreme is what defines the extreme you're talking about, you know? And if you look at the yin and the yang, there's, in the light side of it, there's a dot of dark. And in the dark side, there's a dot of light. And it's like, there's some good in that bad. And there's some bad in that good. They say every cloud has a silver lining. I believe it. And I believe that to be a principle of moderation.
Yeah, I like that. You can moderation exist without extreme? I don't think so. It would be something different.
Yeah.
Like, the extreme defines the moderation,
yes.
And vice versa.
It's like a seesaw, right? Like, where's the midpoint of the seesaw?
Yeah.
In the middle. So what happens if one side's longer? Well, then the middle's got to be moved.
Right. Balance was the word that I had written up there.
Perfect. That's a perfect analogy.
You have to be balanced. Successful people, not just defined in terms of wealth or material stuff, but just people who are happy and other people want to be around them because they feel like they can do more and be more for their own personal lives when they're around a well-balanced person. I think there's an argument to be made that they probably are moderate in certain things. And maybe not in the avoiding the extremes. Maybe they don't consciously do that. But maybe when they feel themselves going too far to one area in their pie chart of life, they go to a different quadrant. And they're like, oh, I need to get back over here a little more.
Which is why I brought up the thing about, I think that you do moderate yourself. If you were all extremed, I would expect that we would be seeing negative consequences. That experience some negative consequences from your extremes,
Internally.
But I have come to associate extremes with negative consequences I just think that the things that we're talking about are universal truths. Like, there really is an inverse you, and if you're always going to the extreme of anything, you're going to end up on the other side of that you. Maybe I'm wrong. Am I wrong about that? Like, do you think
skydiving? That's extreme.
Yeah.
So,
what do you mean it's extreme though?
That's an extreme thing. 99.999% of the humans on Earth are not going to skydive. Like, that's as an extreme activity as you can get.
But I would say the principles of what we're talking about will hold true. When I went skydiving, I got the biggest rush, and it was scary and exciting, and the guy who did it on my back, who was on his 30th jump of the day, was like, eh, another day at the office, man.
Mm-hmm.
So no, same thing happened. He took it to extremes and he didn't get the joy out of it that I did.
So the guy who climbs the mountains in El Capitan without any equipment, and who's, when they, I forget his name, and when they ask him, you know, why are you doing this, he's just like, I don't know, I love it. How many people actually get to die in the middle of doing what they love most? So taking your argument to the extreme, you're saying the more he climbs without that, the less he enjoys it. That's
perhaps
your argument.
Yeah. And I would imagine so when he did it the 50th time, it didn't feel like it did the first time.
But that's a big choice he's still making.
Yeah.
Like, to do that.
Well, maybe he hasn't exhausted the other side of the you. But I would say everybody.
So then when he dies and falls, you would then be back of his funeral being like, that's a motherfucker, he didn't love that shit.
No, he's lying. No. I would say he did love it, absolutely, but I would say he didn't get to the point where it wore out for him. Just like that great song, there would be a point where it wore out for him. I believe that to be true.
So if it didn't wear out for him, then he died doing what he loved and felt great.
And he figured out a way to enjoy it in moderation. Yes.
He probably really loved that last fall.
Yeah, no. So when you're talking about extreme, the consequences of failure on those things are extreme. The activities themselves appear extreme to us because of that. However, if you repeat them over time all the time, they become less extreme to that person.
To that person.
They become routine.
Yes. But to everyone else touching that person, it's still very extreme.
Yeah, everyone else viewing it. So they get all that external societal motivation.
Right.
And then their internal motivation, the universe rewarding them, goes down.
Yeah, I like that. That's good.
Yeah.
What else you got on this topic?
I was going to talk about, and this is probably the least pleasant part to talk about this, but I think we need to recognize, when we say our society doesn't reward moderation, it's pervasive, and it's killing our country in some areas, I think. And especially when you talk about politics. Moderation is something that you can't be almost in politics.
Not in wins nowadays.
Name the most popular moderate, right down the middle person. That's why they create these third parties, you know, the Green Party or the Libertarians or whatever. And guess what? They never win. Never, never, never. Why? Because they don't appeal to the emotional rush that the people get on the extremes of either argument. You can bring up, we talked about controversy last episode. And so this is a really good, I think, follow-up to it, which is controversies are extreme disagreements that last for a long time. You get a rush from taking one side of an argument and battling somebody else, digging in, holding your point, right? Have you ever gotten a rush from
a moderate decision?
From giving in to their points a little bit and taking your points a little bit and saying, yeah, the truth's probably somewhere in between.
Nope.
No, there's no rush there.
Yep, there's no emotional energy.
And our culture wants to label things, right? And they want you to put you in one of two camps, and those are generally by extremes. And they want to associate with those things and then judge you and treat you by those things. And
you're easier to deal with.
Yeah. I would even say that this probably goes back to evolutionary psychology with tribalism, right? Like, our tribe wants this, their tribe wants that. We are right, they are wrong. Now let's fight to the death and see who wins. And we somehow are programmed to behave that way now, even when we're trying to just be quote-unquote civilized and get along. And
yeah, whatever. Now we don't battle as much within a single country and just kill each other. We battle through economics.
Yes, we battle through intellectually, economically, et cetera, right? Socioeconomically. So
no, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and so all of a sudden, I think our innate tribalism supports us wanting to be red team or blue team, us wanting to be, you know, pro this or anti that. And people will ask you, are you pro this or are you anti that? And you can't say, well, you can, but they won't value it. It's almost like they don't even believe you when you say, I see points on both sides, and I think I fall somewhere in the middle on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, but true. Yeah, I'm not agree.
So I would even say, so let's take it to my, now let's inject my opinion, right? Because this is where this gets juicy to talk about, which is, I believe on the most controversial subjects, the ones that are never going to be settled, we're always going to be arguing about them. I believe that there is truth on both sides, and that's why it makes them controversial. If there was not truth on both sides, it would have already been settled. We would have been able to scientifically prove or somehow all become in agreement that, yeah, that's the side we should fall on. And if that's,
I don't think that's controversial at all. Well, I think you're saying the truth, and people prefer the emotional shot of energy from not paying attention to the truth. You kind of explained it already.
Yeah, but I mean, I would love to go to a party and just try to engage, like listen to two people talking, right? Like, I can remember at our fantasy football one, people were arguing about single-payer health care, whether there should be a government payer that competes with insurance companies or not. That's what other countries have, and some people were for it, some people were against it. I would love to be like, well, there's probably, go into that party and be like, guys, you're both making good points. Like, yeah, there needs to be something in the middle. Like, let's brainstorm and come up with a creative solution that's somewhere in the middle. No way. Like,
no one's gonna
conversation's
care.
Dead.
Yep.
Everybody's like,
Ponder doesn't have the balls.
Let's go drink
Ponder
another
doesn't
beer.
Have the balls to take a stand. That's what people would say on the car ride home.
They would just switch the subject and talk about something extreme on some other subject. Yeah. It's crazy. All right.
No, that's good. So that was interesting, Dave.
Yeah.
I like that. Going back, to switch gears, can we?
Yeah.
You have mentioned there's something that you can never do too moderately, and that's love. Well, let's push on that.
Okay.
You can't love somebody too much?
I think you can behave too much, but the feeling of love...
But you didn't say feeling of love earlier. That's different. The expression of, like,
oh, yeah,
feeling love is different than the expression of love.
Yeah, no, you can. You can express love
so
too
to
much.
Me, love can be taken to extremes.
Yeah.
You're too much of an enabler. You want to protect them too much. You want to be too touchy and physical. Like, absolutely, you can take love to the extreme. You can take self-love to the extreme. The opposite end of that is being helpful. Oh, you can't be too helpful. Sure you can.
Oh, you can.
Because you neglect yourself. And if you don't help yourself or love or care about yourself, you're not being as helpful as you can be with other people.
Yeah, you neglect yourself. You don't allow the others a chance to develop and help themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that 100%. You know, it's interesting because what you said is I wanted to defend it when you were like, you can't love too much. And I wanted to be like, well... I mean, I guess you can express love too much, but it's, and I was going to then say, yeah, but there's some wisdom in learn and knowing that you can feel love as much as you want. Like, you can't feel too much love, But your expression of that love has to have boundaries. It has to be moderated.
You're talking to a communication PhD. Yeah. I'm all about the interaction, not just the internal feeling. That's psychology, which is extremely important. That's what we're all doing everything for, to feel good internally. But like when I'm working with Claudia and disciplining her or lecturing her, I'm doing that out of love. But it might not be the most loving expression.
Yeah, it's insane how, and you know, your parents would say it to you when you were a kid, right? And they would punish you. And they'd be like, I'm doing this because I love you, son. I'm doing this because
I
care. I
always say I'm trying to teach you responsibility.
Yeah. And it's funny how, like, when you're a kid, you don't get it. You're like, whatever, I hate you. You do not. If you loved me, you would never be grounding me, or whatever you would say. Because you were a kid and you just didn't understand, right? But what I was going to say was, like, in knowing how to express your love in a way that is a moderate way and that has the most positive benefits, it takes wisdom. I think that I equate wisdom with moderation a lot. And I think that when you're young or when you haven't had an experience, and your emotions tell you otherwise, your emotions tell you take it to the extreme. It's just like eating ice cream. Right?
It's like being a kid. Maybe that's why people love the president, because he brings out that emotional energy from the extremes, and we associate that with the playfulness and the lack of boundaries of being a kid.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm the best. I'm the brightest. We're the best country ever. We got the most, and we got the – he never says anything.
He's the opposite of moderation.
He's like the human embodiment of extremes.
Right. But people are really attracted to that, like we've said. And so maybe there's something going on to where it allows us to be a kid again, to where we don't have to think about, it makes more sense to moderate. We should probably do that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that it just backs up my argument about.
Or just look at any rogue nation who they're led by. They're led by leaders who absolutely don't do things in moderation.
I know.
Everything's excess and extreme.
Yeah.
North Korea.
It backs up my whole argument about politics, and we talked about it being in this country. And I think it's because I'll make this statement, and maybe it's not true because I've only lived. But it seems like as long as I've been alive, we are as extreme as we can be on
politically.
Politically.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're as extreme as we've ever been politically.
Yeah, but I'll qualify it with I didn't really start paying attention to politics until my mid-20s. So before that, maybe we were, and I just didn't care.
I'll agree.
And tune into it.
I'll agree. So okay.
I will say, though, once Obama got in, you know, he received more death threats in, like, the first few months he was in office than I think it was, like, the previous four presidents combined or something. And so that was a pretty polarizing person in office. And then we went to another very polarizing person in office.
Yeah, so I'll qualify it this way. Maybe what I'm not, we're not maybe the most extreme politically as we've ever been, but what I'll say is it seems to me that the national discourse around politics is as extreme as it's ever
been. But can
been.
We ever get away from the media being less extreme outside of some kind of nuclear catastrophe that gives us a big reset?
Yeah, right.
When are they going to just all of a sudden be like, we've really just...
We kind of are overblowing this story.
Yeah. It's never going to happen. It's just going to continue to get more ridiculous as time goes on.
Yes.
Until
you won't believe what happened next.
Until there's catastrophe where we all go, Jesus Christ, we really took this shit way too far in everything. And we can all just breathe and go, okay, let's start from ground zero again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not wanting that. That's the only way it's going to happen.
It's going to have to be when we realign our incentives. Because, like you said, we live in a capitalistic nation, so our incentives are more. We need more clicks on our stories. We need more extreme headlines to draw those clicks. We need, and it just leads down the path of everything that we're talking about, which is extremism in the ideals and the national discourse, which goes against the wisdom that we're talking about. It goes against ancient, you know, philosophies like the yin and the yang. It goes against moderation.
I agreed. Now take it to, again, a much smaller level of where this comes from or how it gets there. Our kids, you don't tell stories going, Claudia learned to read right at the national average. It was sweet. Oh, we potty trained Dylan right on time. Nope, you shared with me the other day, Dylan's already potty trained. Like, wow, why did he do that? Because it's really early. Man, I'm bragging on I'm telling everybody. That's not moderation.
It's true.
And so it's just ingrained in us to not be moderate as a species.
It's noteworthy. What is noteworthy?
Not moderate.
Right. What is...
When's the last time you were celebrating you went out to some win, you took Lauren out to dinner for some moderate business decision you made?
Never.
Never. Yeah. And it never will be.
Never.
But that's why it's probably an important value to think about.
Yeah, and because it gives, like we just said, like the universe is the ultimate moderator. Your internal intrinsic rewards, it's somehow the universe is like, built it in to where it's like, too much of this, bam, you're going to get some bad feelings or consequences.
Yeah, karma.
Too little of this, bam, here comes some bad feelings and consequences. And it's just so funny how we want to fight against it.
But a lot of people just live with those to have the external.
Yeah, and I wonder, though, if it's just a lack of self-awareness.
I don't know. There's a lot of things. People kill themselves for that, you know? So, like, they take it to the end.
You're right.
We just talked about Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah. 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 Well.
I don't know. I got nothing else. Yeah.
Yeah. Change challenges. Maybe we wrap it up on that.
I don't know, man. Moderation. What could you do for a change challenge for moderation? Here's mine. Think about something you do in the extreme, whether it's often or not. Anything. It could be around consumption or around production, like work. Or creative joys that you bring yourself, some kind of hobby. Or it could be around something that you consume. Alcohol, food, running, whatever.
Ideals.
Okay, an ideal. So something you do that, you know, you take it to the extreme. Or as the Eagles say, you take it to the limit. And then all I want you to do is write something down. Write something down about that and say, what if I did it more moderately? And then ...
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. That'll take you 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Just jot down. Don't even use the word journal. I don't like it because it freaks most people out and they think it's some horrible routine they've got to create. Literally just type something up in 30 seconds or write something down in 30 seconds. What would it look like if you took something that you did to the extreme fairly often and you did it more moderately?
So I like that. My idea for a change challenge was going to be somewhat in line with that. So I'll take a different one then. Next time you are at a party or a social function and you hear two people arguing about extremes, just do a little experiment. Try and think about a way to argue something that's right down the middle, to recognize one of their points and recognize the other person's point and say, guys, the truth's probably somewhere in the middle, and see what the reaction is like. I can guarantee you it's going to be one of muted emotion. And it's interesting because what they're trying to get out of that transaction, I believe, is heightened emotion. And so when you mute the emotions, it's going to bring things down and it's going to show you why, I believe, we tend to lean toward extremes when we're having those interactions.
You just gave me a great phrase. Moderation is an emotional mute button.
It kind of is.
No, it's not kind of. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love it. Great experiment. Yeah. Well, as we say at Life Lab, experiment with life.